Thanks for joining us at the Digital Leaders Podcast, where leaders of the digital economy share business advice from their professional experiences. Our guest today is Eric Hanzel, who's the founder of ESG DAO, which focuses on finding and investing in projects that deliver tax-advantaged financial returns along with social and environmental benefits for the communities they exist in. Eric is a passionate and purpose-driven business leader who has worked on sustainability projects in a range of sectors, from the United Nations to the casino industry. Eric joins us on the podcast to discuss the role of the purpose-driven DAO. Oh, it looks like Eric is ready. Let's get started.
Hey Jay, well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm Eric. That's how I introduce myself. That's it.
Nice. But to tell us a little bit about, just from the audience's perspective, tell us a little bit about what you do and maybe just a little bit about how you got there. Like, give us the 30-second elevator pitch about what you have going on.
Sure. So I spent a lot of my career doing sustainability work, specifically standard setting within the sustainability world. And the first standard I created and chaired, it was in the casino industry on sustainability, and it was the first in the industry on sustainability. The goal was to reduce slot machine energy usage by 50%. And at the end of the standard, we had created a holistic document that gave the industry a path forward, saved them lots and lots of money over the years, and is one of the things that kind of helped me to get to the next standard that I did, which was with SASB, the Sustainable Accounting Standards Board. And at the time, that was chaired by Michael Bloomberg. And because of the casino industry work, I was picked to do stuff in the supply chain and the hospitality sectors for that. To go backwards a little bit, when I was doing the standard in the casino industry, we needed to be able to get the message across to more than just the corporate folks. And the way that we did that was by partnering with the World Series of Poker so that we could have conversations with the world's largest casino brand in their biggest book of business, Las Vegas, and their most forward-facing brand, the World Series of Poker, in a way that mattered to casino players, which is what the industry is built on. No, most recently now, I've been participating on a third standard development team, and that is the United Nations Codes team, the Coalition for Digital and Environmental Sustainability, sort of a roadmap forward for their member nation states to reach a sustainable digital age.
Yeah, actually, that's what I was going to mention. You've definitely been working with some of the heavy hitters in the industry. And I think it's just amazing to have somebody of your caliber, you know, here to grace the podcast and speak to the audience.
Thank you.
And I know the project that you're working on now, ESG DAO, give us the pitch on ESG DAO.
Sure. So ESG DAO came up because I was trying to figure out where there was another intersection like there existed in the casino industry, where sustainability hadn't been brought in yet. And it was clear through, because I spent all my time in Web3, that there was an opportunity there to bridge sustainability, large-scale sustainability in. And because I like doing the standard stuff, the geeky side of me wanted to come up with something like that. And then the part that did the World Series of Poker understood that there needed to be a tie-in to something more real. So ESG DAO is a project DAO focused on buying projects that sit at the intersection of tax advantage financial returns along with sustainability and social returns to the communities that we serve. Think about a decentralized renewable energy power company that serves the coastal communities within the United States and beyond. And as I thought about that, though, it became clear that not a lot of people would have the sort of cerebral interest in that. And that if sustainability was going to be a thing in Web3, it needed to be done in a Web3 way in a fun way, in a gamified way. And so I came up with the concept for the Scubaverse as well. So the Scubaverse is a hyper-realistic, learn-to-earn underwater metaverse game that we're creating to engage new stakeholders and specifically kids so that they can learn in a fun way about conservation and its importance. And through a partnership with a guy named Amos Nachum, who is a National Geographic explorer and has led multiple expeditions for them. We are looking to find the next generation of explorers like Amos, who he and his colleagues will mentor and help to visually tell the story of our planet for future generations in the way that Amos does with his pictures.
Nice.
Thanks.
I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, so one of the other things that we were chatting about offline that stuck out to me in terms of one of the reasons that you sort of felt compelled to start this ESG DAO was you're looking at the landscape of ESG and how some of these major companies are just sort of buying and selling and trading these carbon credits and not really putting in the work to make a real sustainable impact on our environment. And I think that's one of the driving factors behind ESG DAO. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. I mean, so a lot of my colleagues point out as well that the ESG investing market is broken. And it was during the early work with SASB, we talked about the materiality of sustainability to a company's shareholder value, which is the same language used by companies when they report their financials materiality. And it was really the first time we had talked about it in relation to sustainability. Carbon offsets were meant to be an on-ramp for companies to be able to immediately start reducing their negative impact on the environment. And because carbon offsets are inexpensive, relatively easy to obtain, and they became the thing. Instead of the on-ramp, they became the way that companies offset their stuff forever until more regulation comes. So the ESG market is $40 trillion. It's over a third of the global assets under management, and it's directed in the wrong way. The things that will actually get us to the sustainable development goals, to scalable decarbonization, to real climate solutions that affect global temperatures in a positive way, those are not buying carbon offsets. So those are things like scalable renewable energy and replanting mangroves versus land-based forests, which sequester much more CO2 than land-based forests do, and protect our shorelines. So ESG DAO was formed in a way kind of say, I think we know the right way to do it, the way to make sure everybody gets taken care of in the equation, that Scrooge McDuck gets his financial return and its tax advantage, and that the hippies get their crunchy granola stuff, and that the socially conscious folks get all the good things that need to be baked in, like diversity and inclusion, to every project. And by reverse engineering the path, I think that we're able to easily tick those boxes. So I brought on as a co-founder a guy named Keith Ropchak. Keith does partnerships at the National Renewable Energy Lab, which is a government-funded program, and he also runs their hydrogen fuel program. He has experience with renewable energy projects at a very large scale and running large multidisciplinary teams towards execution. And the kinds of projects that we're looking at are solar or wind, and things like brokering virtual power purchase agreements between companies that build and companies that need. It will make our DAO money. It will also help our DAO to have tax advantage, and it will help our DAO to provide real life benefits to the communities that we serve and the environments they exist within.
Gotcha. Well, look, we've spoken before, so, and I've heard you've shared some of this information with me. I've been doing some of my own research as well. So I'm convinced that this is a real problem that we need to tackle. And I'm glad that there are people like you who have the knowledge and are willing to, you know, sort of like hold their feet to the fire and do the actual work that we need to move this forward. I think the real question that I have is surrounding the aspects of DAOs. And I'm really wondering, what is it about a DAO that makes it a good solution for organizing and coordinating that sort of human effort that would allow for you to perform these types of activities?
That was a good question. So I think the thing that's appealing to me about DAOs is that they're similar in structure to the standard development teams that I'm comfortable working within. You bring together a group of smart, engaged, passionate people, all wearing different glasses, looking at the same problem and working collaboratively to find the best solution. Within a standard development team, that's where it stops. It's all volunteer. In a DAO, you can get paid. So to my standard development friends, this seems like the next logical step. The thing is, when you talk about a DAO, the thing that's the most appealing to me is that there is no top-down structure. So if this were a regular business versus a DAO, there would be a CEO and a CFO and a CMO and all that stuff. And within a DAO, the leadership is a bit more dynamic, I think. And so there are things that I will lead on, and there are things that I will happily follow the other leaders on. And each person in the DAO is a leader in the thing that they're good at. And I think that if you can approach life that way, that, hey, I'm good at this and I'm not good at this, and if I could find people that are good at the things I'm not good at, it'll make everyone's life easier and everybody gets to win. Within top-down organizations, no matter how they start, once the money pours in, there winds up being this greed, and it drives the culture often. Within a DAO, through governance, we can vote using our "we want to achieve this" selves on the way that things will be paid out and things will happen in the future to protect us from our greedier selves. And I think that that appeals to a lot of folks, to ensure that the work that we do is what's important and it continues. Because at the end of the day, I believe that climate change is an issue, that we need to be able to reduce global temperatures, and that the way to do that, which takes care of the most amount of people, or one of the ways, is through purchasing and selling renewable energy, because it reduces our reliance on the fossil fuel supply chain, which is the thing that causes us to go to war. So forget about the environmental impact. Just think about safety. Countries all over the world fight over oil. Countries all over the world support others that fight over oil. And right now, we're heading into this potentially recession or period of inflation because we just kept printing money. I think that if you generate energy where you are and you can sell it transactionally back and forth through the grid, eventually that's where we get to, a transactional energy model where everybody sort of has this stuff on their house or in their yard, and then it gets sold back and forth. And when during periods of peak demand, you can sell it and make some money. And during periods of lower demand, you can buy it back and store it in batteries. I think that the folks that understand that are the ones in the next 20 or 30 years that are going to make a really big impact on the issues around global temperatures and decarbonization.
Gotcha. The piece that you said there just now that I really like, that I sort of latched on to, is DAOs are the evolution of what's happening in the industry in terms of people would usually volunteer to be on these types of organizations and do this work just for free and, you know, out of the goodness of their heart. But you know what happens when you volunteer is sometimes it's not always your priority because you have to pay the bills, right? You've got a mortgage, you've got kids in school, you've got medical expenses, whatever it is, you've got stuff that you have to pay for. And if you're volunteering, that isn't necessarily contributing to the needs of your personal life. But as a DAO, you're able to bring to bear these financial resources that would allow for the people who are actually doing the work and the boots on the ground to be able to also take advantage of the financial upside of the work that they're putting in. And I think that is the difference maker for me. Like you said that, and suddenly the light bulb went off in my head, like, oh, that's what's happening. And I get it. thank you for that.
At least to me, that's what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I know, let's bring this conversation back to the audience I know that there are people who are in the audience who've been hearing this DAO word being thrown around, decentralized autonomous organizations, and you've sort of broken it down for us just now so that we have a better understanding of DAOs. And I've spoken to a few people who are interested in starting a DAO, in particular purpose-driven DAOs, because that seems to be the way that this whole DAO movement is going. It's not just about financial gain like we did in the past with C-Corps and LLCs, but DAOs, I think, are more geared towards doing something good, whether that's sustainability or diversity or providing access to resources. I'd love for you to share some of your advice from your experiences with creating this DAO. Share some of that advice with the audience in terms of what they could do if they were hoping to start up a DAO. Are you up for having that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, ask a ton of questions. That's what I did. Like, I talked to everybody that I possibly could. I told them what I thought a DAO could be, and I listened to the way that they responded to me to understand if it kind of matched up, and talk to the smartest people you could find. Like, you know, I talk with Marco, who runs the Polygon DAO. I talk with the folks that run Governor DAO, Resistance DAO. I follow Renee Davis. I forget her DAO, but it's around research. And Anthony Day. Pay attention to the people that really are a little bit ahead of you, because everybody's sort of starting and we all bring this different viewpoint to what a DAO is. So the way that I've approached it is learn as much as I possibly can, ask as many questions as I possibly can, and then jump out of the fucking airplane and, you know, put the parachute on while you're flying down. Like, don't wait, just do it.
I like that. Well, let me take that one at a time then. So in terms of asking as many questions as you can, have you found that, like, you and I have a pretty good relationship. We met on LinkedIn, and I've met tons of other people on LinkedIn, and it's fairly easy to sort of have these conversations with people, and people are willing to talk with you and share their advice and stuff. Have you found that same community in the DAO space as well?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, people that run DAOs, they understand that this is the future. Hedge funds will be DAOs, or DAOs will be hedge funds, or they already are. I mean, if you own, let's say, a real estate investment company, right, and you have $3 billion that you invest into projects, and you're someone who started this 50 years ago, and your kids and now your grandkids are involved. The way that it's typically run is that there's a chairman and a president and a CEO and all these different people that run underneath them. DAO structure allows for things to be a bit different with safeguards set up by smart contracts. So perhaps the founder, the chairman, is good at one thing, really good at that one thing, finding and buying properties at a really good value. And then one of the kids is good at another thing, all of the paperwork and the operational stuff. And then another one is good at something else. And one of the grandkids is good at this, and one of the grandkids is good at that. And this gives them an opportunity to sort of level things out. Because one of the problems with these multi-generational, high, ultra-high net worth families, family office kind of people, is that it's difficult to engage future generations in what the first generation cared about. So if you can do it in a way that lets the future generations own that piece and lets them build up that part of the business while you're still doing your stuff, then it balances out and it lets these grandkids or great grandkids or be as creative as they want to be and follow their passion, which means that the business continues. And I think that that's one of the things that will help family offices continue is as they spread out, they let the younger generation do the things that they want to be doing.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense to me. You do see a lot of that. And sometimes it turns into these almost like infighting situations where, like you're saying, the younger generation wants to take it in a new direction, but it's not necessarily path that the original founders wanted to go. But you're saying in a DAO structure, this sort of autonomy gives you the ability to pursue both states at the same time?
I think so. I mean, if you are careful enough to craft it in that way, then you wind up with those results. And what I was saying about family offices applies to companies and everything else, right? Like governments. And the way that things change is not by having a boss and people under them, because they are that way because there is a boss and people under them. The way that things change is by doing it differently. And when you understand that your human capital is probably the most valuable thing that you have, because it allows you to look at different problems and solve for them over time versus just selling, versus just being transactional, like here's this product, you give me a dollar, I'll give you the product, we're done. Mm-hmm. This is the ability for your people to come together and come up with creative ideas that allow business to grow into something that you never thought it could. So as an example, when I started the casino standard, I thought that we should make slot machines 50% more energy efficient, which was ridiculous at the time. The casino industry was not interested in it. And it was also ridiculous on the low end because we could definitely make them way more energy efficient. My willingness to, I think they call it bottom up now, to approach it in a bottom up way, is the thing that allowed us to come up with this standard that covered everything. It went way beyond my initial like small thought, and it created a real framework for casinos and the industry to work off of, to save energy and increase air quality and all that stuff. So I think that approaching this DAO in the same way will allow us to get it right instead of being right, which is very important to me. I don't care if I'm the one that comes up with something or you do or three-year-old does. If it works, it works. And we're going to celebrate the people that came up with it because they deserve that.
No, for sure. The last thing that you said just now that stuck out to me as well is that statement about jumping out of the plane and putting the parachute on as you're going down. And I definitely get why that's necessary, especially being at the early stages of Web3 and crypto and NFTs, all that stuff sort of happening at the same time. We're building this thing as we go, and it makes sense to just get started versus waiting until you have it all planned out and it looks perfect. And that might be years from now, but then you've allowed all of these years to pass without doing any actual work. So it makes sense to just jump in both feet first and get going. But I'd say probably by doing that, you've probably run into a few difficulties, maybe made some mistakes along the way. Can you speak to us and advise the audience and maybe some of the missteps that you've made that hopefully they'll be able to avoid?
I mean, I made a ton of them. Like, I think the thing is, you have to make a ton of them. For me, it's almost more exciting. The process is almost more exciting than the end result for me. I love the part of finding the right people, of first figuring out what it is that we need to do, and then figuring out what are the right types of people, and then finding the right people, and then getting them to want to participate because they believe in something that's bigger than a business, and then helping them to start talking to each other versus just to me, and then getting them to start coming up with creative ideas that we could use. I love all that shit, dude. So to me, all the messing up is the way to get it. When I was a little kid and I played Pitfall on Atari, and that dates me, I guess. I remember like each time I would die, I would remember how to get past that the next time. So then I would get past it, and then I would die somewhere else. And then it would take me a little while to learn why I died and what I could do to not die. And then I would know that one, and I would be able to get past it. And I would say, if you approach building a DAO or anything in a similar way to that, like just because you're older, it doesn't give you the right to not have to learn shit. Like when I was a kid, I happily learned shit. And when I'm a grown up, I happily learned shit. I think some people, when they get older, they think that they're past that. And so it annoys them when these things come up. To me, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, there it is. Now I know I got to do it a little differently. Yeah. And maybe by doing it differently, it turns out way better than I thought at the beginning. But if I'm attached to the way the outcome occurs, that's impossible.
Hey, I like that analogy about Pitfall. I played Pitfall too as a kid, but on the PC. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's about learning from your mistakes and correcting those mistakes and moving forward as best as you can. I think one of the advantages that you get with a DAO is you're not working alone. A lot of what we've seen come out of Web 2 is this whole thing about being a solo entrepreneur. You start out by yourself, build it as fast as you can. You raise some money, you get some seed funding, and then you hire some people afterwards. But with DAOs, and I think this is the model that you've taken, is you start out with a community. And so everyone is building together, and it's not sort of all on your shoulders. So if something goes wrong, there are other people who have eyes on it, and they're able to share where they think you guys went wrong as a group. And then as a collective, you're also able to correct on it. But also, there are other people who are watching to be able to point out where something might go wrong so that you can avoid it before you even get to that stage. Because like you're saying, everyone has their own pair of glasses that they're wearing, right?
That's right. And I would say understanding who you are and the things that you're good at and the things that you're not, and not attaching anything positive or negative to that is sort of the key. Being able to approach DAO members, you know, like in a level way, just, hey, I bring this to the table, you bring this to the table, you bring this to the table, you bring this to the table, is important. And each of them can say, hey, we don't like this or we do like this. But understand that when you were talking about Web2 being solopreneurs, I would say that at the beginning, when you come up with this idea, it will be you by yourself for a while until you understand the kinds of people that you need to bring into the mix and what skill sets specifically you need. At the beginning, it was a lot of just me writing, thinking, talking to random people, kind of working through the pitch or the way that things go in my head. And then I started talking with folks about it, but they were all in buckets. Like I would talk to Joe and then I would talk to Chris and then I would talk to Keith, but everyone was in their own bucket and they didn't talk to each other. So it was still sort of that solo thing. The thing that the mistake that I think I made that I would correct if I was doing it again would be to try to find those people or find a core group as quickly as possible so we could start having meetings together as quickly as possible so that the trajectory is clear. And it's not, I think it should go this way. And then these people come in and they're like, oh no, we have to go down a little to go back up. And if I wouldn't have messed up because I was doing it by myself, we wouldn't have to adjust for that. So I think that's the one thing I would have started sooner. And I'm happy to help any of your listeners that want to reach out. And I'm happy to have conversations with people about the DAOs that they want to start
Well, thank you for that. And so we'll get your information in just a few minutes so that people can maybe reach out to you if they're at that position where they're ready to get started and ready to start having some conversations. But there's one more question that I want to ask you. Given your experience with these purpose-driven DAOs and in the sustainability industry, can you give us a prediction for where you think these types of purpose-driven DAOs will be in the next 5 years? What's their trajectory?
I mean, I think the thing the pandemic showed us was that, or showed a lot of people, is that there's more to life than going back and forth to work and doing the sort of necessary things. A lot of people, including myself and my kids, we took time to go hiking and camping and walks on the beach. And that kind of stuff's amazing. So I think as people understood, and now we see it with corporations saying you either have to come back to the office or you can work remotely. I think that DAOs allow people, it's baked in to be remote. You don't have to be in any specific place. One of my co-founders is in Chile and the other one is in central US and I'm on the East Coast. And I think that's really appealing to a lot of people. And as the world starts to understand that gamifying big problems is the way to engage people in solution, it's going to become more clear that work is for productivity, not for time spent. And the more people start to understand that, I think the more that DAOs will gain in popularity. That said, look, 5G is the technical infrastructure that we need in order to allow for the Internet of Things and metaverses and all this stuff, this like huge transfer of data. And that infrastructure has been funded by the US government. So I know that there's a lot of concerns now around this industry because of the way that the markets have gone. But I would say that that correlates really well to what's going on in real life with inflation and war. And I think that DAOs in this industry, Web3, are the next 50 years, not 5 years. I think that most people will work in DAOs. Most people that work with their brains will work in DAOs. And folks that are not currently working with their brains because they believe something bad about themselves will begin to. Like, it doesn't matter if you work at McDonald's. If you know how to get the word out on social media, you're ripping yourself off. You're making $15 an hour or whatever when you could be making maybe $100 an hour as a social media influencer. And I think it's just a shift, and it's a big shift. But yeah, I think that this is the very beginning of something that's going to be around until my grandkids are around.
Nice. I definitely agree with you. I think DAOs represent the future of work that a lot of people will eventually make the majority of their income by working for DAOs, and maybe not in the same way that we think of working for an LLC or a C Corp is right now, in terms of you may work for multiple DAOs. You know, you may make multiple income.
Yeah, that's right. And you should. Yeah. And so I would say too that DAOs allow for this remote work, this it levels the playing field for so many people. You and I spoke offline. After I did the casino stuff, I had a spinal injury and it put me in a wheelchair, supposedly for the rest of my life. And it took me 2.5 years to learn how to walk. And I can't work in the same way that I used to. I just can't, but I can use my brain. And there are a lot of people, and I'm very lucky that I was able to recover in the way that I did, both physically and mentally. There are a lot of people who don't. And the opportunities in Web3, in the metaverses, in DAOs for inclusion and diversity around disabilities is one of the most exciting things. One of the groups that we partner with is called Dive Heart. And they get people with spinal injuries, people who are with PTSD, veterans with disabilities, scuba diving. And they do it because there's data out there that shows that when you go scuba diving, it gives you kind of the same effects as meditation, long-lasting well-being effects. So if scuba diving can do that and can make somebody feel whole in ways that they haven't before, getting back to work is kind of the next amazing thing. So yeah, I think that DAOs are around for a really long time. They do a lot of really good stuff. And the fact that they're built on this decentralized work from wherever you are thing, it's going to appeal to people who maybe have been out of the workforce for a long time and now can find their way back, like me.
Nice. That's really powerful, Eric. I think that's a good place to close it. But before we wrap up, I'll let you share some of your contact information with the audience. Where can people find you online? How can they find out more about ESG DAO?
So they could find me on LinkedIn, Eric Hansel. They could find ESG DAO and the Scubaverse on Twitter at ESG DAO and at the Scubaverse. And they could email me at esgdao@gmail.com. We also have a Discord. And when you come to my LinkedIn, you can see the Discord there.
Okay, amazing. Eric, it's been awesome having you on the show. You shared a ton of information.
Thanks, Jay.
Shared a ton of value with the audience. I learned a ton from you, even though we've had some of this conversation before. As you're going through, I'm like, oh, wow, that, you know, like I told you, I had that light bulb moment. Oh, that's what people are doing with DAOs. So, and it's so refreshing to have that live while we're doing this podcast. So I definitely appreciate you. I appreciate you being here. I think, like I was telling you before, this us meeting together like this is spurred something in me that makes me realize I need to really dive deeper into this whole issue and concept of DAOs. And I'll let the audience know that hopefully we'll have some more people on from DAOs to talk to us about how DAO organizations work and talk about their specific organizations. So I'm really excited for that. So thank you, Eric, for being the catalyst that helps to drive our helping to drive our podcast in that new direction.
Thank you very much.
So Eric, we wish you the best of luck. Send you best wishes with ESG DAO and with everything that's happening in your life. And ask that as things continue to progress, that you come back and give us an update on how everything is happening, how everything is going with the organization.
I would love to. I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much.